Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome everyone to another episode of Recovering from Religion's Faces of RFR. I'm Eric Wells. I am the support group director, and we do this on occasion. We talk to some of the volunteers who are helping us out at RFR, and to kind of get an idea of why they joined and what they get out of volunteering, and just to get to know them. So today we have got another fantastic volunteer. I'm very, very excited to talk to her. Gwen, welcome. Welcome today.
Hi, thank you.
Hi. So what's your name?
I'm Gwen Blodgett and I'm in Florida and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I love it. And what part of Recovering from Religion do you volunteer for?
I work with the helpline area. I help out. Right now I'm working on a project to improve how we handle volunteers and some of that. So I'm technically the project manager on that. But once I free up from that, I'll come back and start doing more chats and helping with the admin stuff of the helpline.
Yeah, we talked a little bit with Chris Boothman on an earlier episode, and he got to let us know a little bit about what RFR 3.0 is and kind of his view of it. And so I'd love to get into that with you a little later on if you want.
Absolutely. And so basically my role is to keep Chris in line.
So. He does need a wrangler along with the other folks who are volunteering with the IT.
Yes.
How long have you been volunteering with RFR?
Just over a year.
Okay, got it. Very cool. What do you do outside of RFR? Like, how do you make money?
I work for an insurance agency. Well, an insurance company, but I work in sort of our, I manage an IT-ish area. We aren't technically IT, but we're responsible for software, procedures, audits, a lot of technical stuff. I spend a lot of time listening to technical type things and then solving problems. That's a big thing.
You know. So you like to kind of solve problems?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah, that's something that I really enjoy too. And I kind of took that into the construction industry for remodels, kind of looking at like what do we have here, where does it need to go, and how do we get from point A to point B. So it's something that problem solving is something I really
yes enjoy. Yes, every day there's some new twist or challenge, and most of the time I can go, all right guys, there's a solution waiting for us to find it.
I love it. Sounds like you're pretty darn good at your job.
Most days.
What do you like doing in your free time?
I like to dance. I like to swim. I like to exercise. I go walking in the morning with a group of ladies. I like to paint and garden and read and write and, you know, I like to travel. Last year I was able to go to Japan. I went to Costa Rica. Oh. Yeah. It's so I'm not doing much traveling right now, but I do love to travel.
I don't think a lot of people are doing much traveling right now in the middle of this COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you like to read? Because I like reading science fiction and stuff like that. Do you have anything in particular you like to read?
Well, I like to, well, so one of my hobbies is I write a little bit of erotica. And so I have some other friends. And so I'm currently reading a friend's erotic book, and it's been very good. And then I also like mysteries. And then I like to read like self-help books as well. Just finished. I really love How to Unfuck Your Brain and stuff about how the brain works, how we think, how we process stuff. I really enjoy that. And yeah.
Got it. Now, kind of going back to RFR a little bit, have you ever been religious, and do you have a story behind that at all?
Yes. So I drank the Kool-Aid. I was born into a religious family. My grandfather was a minister, and his father, and all the way back 9 generations. And I was raised 9 generations. Yes.
So yeah. Here in the States or in
America? In 1632, my 10th great grandfather came from England via Holland because they got kicked out of England for not following the Church of England. They came to Plymouth and they settled. One of my grandfathers was the first pastor at the Old Ship Church in Massachusetts. Wow. And yeah, so New England heritage, lots of very religious family members. My aunt's a missionary. My mom is currently runs a mission organization for children in the Kibera slum in Kenya. And my sister was a missionary in New York City for 12 years. And my first husband was a Southern Baptist preacher. So I was a preacher's wife. And
so you were a preacher's daughter and a preacher's wife.
Grandfather preachers. My grandfather was the preacher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I was a preacher's wife. And then I did a little stint of gospel clowning. So I would, my mom and I would do vacation Bible schools throughout New England. And we would do puppets. And I was a ventriloquist and a gospel magician. And I'd dress up like a clown. And yeah.
Wow. You that was... You literally drank the Kool-Aid. That is a great, I have not heard of anything like that. Like, it's so deeply rooted in your family, it sounds like.
Yes, very deeply rooted. And so that's been the real struggle is that it seems like every few months I discover something else that is, I'm like, oh my goodness, that's from religion too, you know?
Yeah. You know, working in the support, I was a support group leader for about 5 years, and the same thing happened to me. I've been an atheist for about 10 years now, and I keep finding stuff, ways that I think or ways that I act that kind of go back to how I was raised religious and some of my private school teaching and stuff. So, yeah, it's
yeah.
It's a lot of work to kind of find that and work on yourself to get it straightened out.
Yes.
So yeah. What kind of started you doubting that this stuff was real?
Well, after my first marriage ended, I was disqualified from working in the church because I was divorced. Oh. So I bought a Christian. So
was he disqualified as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so we were both disqualified, no need to go into all the details, but I still wanted to serve God, and I felt like God told me to buy the Christian bookstore, so I bought the Christian bookstore, and being there, I served all religions, so I had always been in kind of my very fundamental exclusive group, but I became friends with nuns, and there was a Lutheran pastor that I became very close to. And I started like going, wait a second, because I'd always believed our group was the group that had it right. And it started kind of, yeah. I started going, wait a second, there's like all different branches. And then in 2007, when a lot of things went under, a lot of private bookstores went under, I went under as well. Mm. And went through bankruptcy, got remarried, and I just kind of drifted from going to church regularly. And then slowly over time, I started just kind of not having that weekly, well, actually almost daily pumping in. And then as my kids got older and they started facing challenges, I started wondering if I was hearing God or if I was hearing myself. I started doubting the answers to my prayers. And then I took a class through Coursera on the history of mankind taught by, oh, I wish I'd remembered it. History of Mankind, I think is the name of the book, but it was like this 12-week class. And in it, he talked about some of the atrocities that were committed by missionaries. And I grew up, we didn't know about Spider-Man and Wonder Woman. We had the missionary of the week card. And like, we learned about their family and where they served and we prayed for them. And I remember being really especially tied to this one family because they had a daughter the same age as me named Gwen. And so they were my favorite missionary family. They were my missionary hero. And then when I started finding out, like, you know, Amy Carmichael and some of these other, you know, missionaries and mission organizations and how they would, you know, refuse to help people unless they converted, or they would exchange guns if the chief vowed to make his whole village Christian. And I started going, that doesn't sound right. And then the kicker was when he taught about how as humans, we are really good at putting together imaginary things. So he had the example of business. It's an imaginary thing. It's not the people. The people can change, the buildings can change, the products or services provided can change. It's just that we as a people agree that this is a business and this is how we have to interact. And it's the same way with our governments and with our money. And I went, that's God. God is simply an agreement we make with other people and we interpret the world in light of that agreement. And I remember I was just in my kitchen. I went, I don't believe in God anymore.
Wow, so it was really quick then. It wasn't a long downhill type of thing.
Yeah, well, it was about probably 8 years from when I first started going, wait a second, we're not the only ones, until that moment. It was about an 8 year journey. But I was a fully committed, believing in God, didn't have doubts of God when I walked into the kitchen. And that lesson, I went, I don't believe in God.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. That's neat.
Yeah.
So how would you kind of describe your beliefs now? Where are you at now?
Well, I happily call myself an atheist. Because as I define that word, that is someone who does not have an active belief in God. I don't know for certain that there isn't something supernatural or outside of ourselves, or, you know, I sometimes love dabbling in the philosophy and are we a brain in a vat? And I'm getting a bot named after that. I'm calling it Beva. I believe in humans. I believe in the power of connection. I believe in the spirit of moving forward and learning and seeking to be better tomorrow than you were today. And I do think that for many people, their God feels very real because, again, they're in a world where they've agreed with the other people in their world to interpret the world as though God is real, and so therefore God appears real.
Mm. That's neat. I like that. Coming out of religion, what's been the hardest thing that you've had to kind of overcome from your old belief system to your new belief system?
The biggest thing is learning to be an autonomous person that belongs to me. Oh. Yes. Yeah, and I highly recommend the RFRX on autonomy.
Well, that was kind of good for you then.
I can't even tell you how since what, I mean, I have just like evolved another step because of that lesson. I just, yeah.
So cool to hear. Yeah.
So all of my upbringing was the chief end of man is to serve God and make him known, you know, and as a woman, my role was to support my husband and, you know, I was to allow God to work and not try to change things. And I was to live as simply as possible so my money could go to the church so other people wouldn't go to hell. And, you know, my actions were responsible for other people's eternal destination. Mm-hmm. That's a really heavy burden. And you stop having your own hopes and dreams. And, you know, the more enlightened in Christianity you are, the more you dedicate everything about yourself to loving God. And so learning to love myself and to allow other people to be responsible for their own mistakes and it not be because I wasn't good enough or I didn't do enough or I didn't give enough or I didn't, you know, whatever. And also learning to do the things I like to do. That's, you know, at times it kind of freaks me out. I'm like, okay, who should I be making happy? Oh, me. I get to make me happy.
That's so good to hear. And you sound kind of really free and excited to kind of discover yourself, it almost seems like.
I really like me. I'm finding I like me.
What's not to like, Gwen?
Talk to me last week. I could have told you.
So yeah, we've got all of those RFRX videos on the YouTube channel that you're kind of watching this on right now. And I think that was on the 15th of June. July. Yeah, 20 June. Thank you.
Yeah. We're not in July yet. Don't rush us.
It feels like this has been the longest year ever.
It has. It really has.
So have you watched it again? Like watched it?
No, but it's on my list for this weekend.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I think I've told like 12 people, you gotta watch this.
I love it. I thought it was a really good one too. Yes, Marie Delafond did such a fantastic job talking us through from almost like zero to really a good solid foundation of understanding autonomy and boundaries and consent too. The boundary thing is something I've got to work on.
Yeah. Well, again, if there's this thing, is what you're saying no to really more important than someone spending eternity in hell? I mean, that's the weight that they take away your boundaries with. Yeah.
So how did you first hear about recovering from elision?
Well, when I first realized I was an atheist, I Googled it and I found The Thinking Atheist. And in work, some of the best things I've learned have been at conventions. So I went, what's a convention near me that has something to do with atheism? And I managed to go to the Humanist Convention in Philadelphia. I believe it was 2014. And I believe it was there that I heard about Daryl Rae's books, The God Virus and Sex and God. And so I got those books. I read them twice. They both were so powerful, really, really just like, again, this like whole level of, oh my goodness, you know? And then I remember hearing in some of the podcasts I was listening to that you were coming up with the 1-800, I doubt it. And I was like, man, I wish I'd known about that. I don't doubt it anymore. And then I heard a call for volunteers and I remember thinking, oh, someday I want to do that. But at the time, I still had a number of teenagers living at home and I knew that I couldn't commit. And I also felt a little bit like maybe I hadn't been an atheist long enough to help other people. I have learned that is not true.
Yeah, and you don't even really have to call yourself an atheist either to volunteer.
Exactly. I think that is the coolest part about the, I'm going to jump ahead to something, but this is one of the coolest things I love about RFR is that even though a lot of us are atheists, we are not in the business of making atheists. We are in the business of helping people whose lives have been harmed by religion in some form. And if people want to still be religious, if religion still works for them, we're not there to say you shouldn't be religious. We're there to say you need to make sure you're healthy, that you're caring for yourself, that you're thinking for yourself, and you're finding your best path. And I absolutely love that. And yeah, sometimes it's tempting if you're doing a chat or you're talking to someone and you're like, oh, if they could just give up this religious concept, maybe, you know, but that's not where we're at. We're about coming alongside people and helping them the best they can. And from being that neighbor who showed up at your door, yes, I did show up at your door with the Jesus video at Christmas.
You were that one?
I was that one, yes. So I love that I don't care. I don't care about your religious beliefs. I care about your emotional, mental, and physical well-being.
Yeah. So when did you kind of start the process of start volunteering?
So I was able to go to the Atheist Convention in Cincinnati in 2019, and I walked by the Recovering from Religion table, and I got to meet Daryl Ray, and I was like, total fangirl.
Oh my God, loved your book. was Gail Jordan there too, I think?
Gail Jordan was there too. And then I met David because, well, I met some people at the bar and we got talking. And of course, if you tell people you were once a gospel clown, they're like, really? You know, so. And then I got talking and heard again more about Recovering from Religion. I got invited to a little demo and got to meet Gail Jordan and a bunch of the staff and saw how it works. And I said, oh yeah, sign me up, sign me up. So I went back to my room, started reading. I was like, I've had a little too much to drink to fully process. I'll do it on the plane. So
don't make these kinds of these volunteering decisions when you're drunk. Don't make those.
Exactly. So I think I got my application submitted by the end of April. I had my first interview early May, and I was trained, and I think I took my first chat sometime in June of last year.
So you're coming up on, if not already past, your 1 year anniversary here.
Yep, just past 1 year.
Oh, congratulations. That's so cool.
I'll tell you, I love it.
And so kind of before you kind of knew that we're not really in the business of deconverting or anything like that, or that we can, all sorts of folks, not just atheists, can join the be volunteers. Why did you really want to do this?
Really, a big reason was I can remember counseling women to go back to abusive husbands. I remember I remember counseling kids to go back into abusive families. I remember sending people back into harmful, emotionally bad ways. I remember telling an 11-year-old girl who asked, "What happens when girls like other girls?" and telling her, "God doesn't make people that way."
Oh, Gwen.
And I've been able, I still know that girl, and I was able to hug her and tell her, yes, people do get made that way, and I love you. And, you know, I just felt that it was a little something I could do. I did from what I understood in the indoctrination, and was always with a desire to help. But I want to give and help somebody. And I actually got to do a chat a little while ago with a preacher kid. And because my kids were preacher kids, I knew exactly what was going on with her. And I so wanted to just be like, oh, honey, I'm so sorry on behalf of your parents. I'm so sorry, you know. But thankfully, our training it's about not being about us. That conversation was about her and about helping her get to a place where she's going to be able to feel stronger and move into a place of safety for herself and to help her gain confidence. And I wept after the conversation because I was like, I wish this had been there for my kids before I became an atheist. My younger two kids had great reactions though, I tell you. So my son was 17 when I told him, and I brought him to the humanist convention with me. He found sitting listening to lectures was boring, but he enjoyed getting away from school for a day. But he looked at me and he said, "Well, I'm glad you figured it out." And I went, "What?" I said, "I remember you praying and saying your cubby verses." He says, "I was just pretending." He says, "I knew I needed to, because I haven't believed ever." And then I went to visit my daughter, who was already grown and had her own place. And I remember she was cooking at the table. And I said, "Honey, I need to tell you something." And she said, "Well," I said, "I'm an atheist." And she just kind of like whipped around and she went, "Now? You couldn't have figured that out when I was a kid?"
Oh my gosh. So it sounds like those two kids kind of like knew what was going on and had to just pretend for as long as they were in the house.
Yeah, well, since the middle daughter, I think she was true blue for quite a while. And then as she grew up, it just kind of didn't have any importance for her. Mm. And so.
That's a beautiful story. So it sounds like, back in the day, you did the best that you thought you could with the information you had at the time.
Yes.
And now that you have new information, it sounds like you want to kind of undo some of that work. Yes. That you did in the past.
Yes. And especially because when I was 15, I went through a rough patch with the church, and I really doubted that God was good. And I really struggled, and I was this rebel kid, and all of New England was praying for this messed up kid, you know, and I came out of that because of the choices I had made. I had some consequences, and I went, okay, God's real. And I just threw myself full into God. And I look back and I go, if I'd found Recovering from Religion's website back in the 80s and even been exposed to the idea that there might not even be a God, maybe my doubts would have gone there instead of causing me to double down.
Yeah. So you touched a little bit on it, but what do you get out of the volunteering? What is it in for you?
Well, one, I like, well, it's twofold. So one, I really do like helping other people. And I like the challenge of somebody coming, you know, you getting a chat or the project working with Chris. you know, you get somebody who's got something they're struggling with, and through, you know, reflective listening, helping them find either the resources for them to move to the next step of their journey or to make a realization or discovery about themselves. I really, really enjoy that.
But it sounds like it kind of goes back to the problem solving that's stuff. Yes. We talked about earlier.
Yes, you know, and being able to, you know, and somebody might just be like, I had one chat where he was like, I don't believe anymore. I don't know how to make friends outside of church. And so I was able to say, well, what are some other things you like doing? How are, you know, and I think, yeah, I don't know. I don't remember. Maybe rock climbing. You know, I was like, well, you know, there's rock climbing groups on Meetup. And he's like, oh. And he's like, you know, searching for ways to meet people about other things he cares about. And it was great because it was just reflective listening, and I knew it was helping solve a problem.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
What was the second thing?
The second thing is it helps me grow and shed some of that religious stuff as well. So as I'm learning more about the resources, as I'm watching other chats or doing chats of my own and seeing the discovery people are making, I'm learning, I'm growing, again, I got to say, I think you get more out of this than you put in.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. I've been doing this for 5 or so years now, and that is absolutely true. I put a lot into it, and I've been getting a lot out of it.
Yeah. Plus the relationships with the other volunteers, you know, that I have made some really cool connections with people.
Yeah, there's some really great people in the volunteer community here.
Yes.
So what do you see for the future of your work with RFR? And like, what would keep you going?
Well, I'm really excited about this RFR 3.0 and how we're going to be able to make it easier for people coming to the website to find their resource. We're going to be able to make it easier for us to know how to staff that chat line and the phone line so that we can be there for more people, you know, and that we're going to be able to support our volunteers, because again, and I know it firsthand, sometimes these calls are heart-wrenching and you need some care for yourself afterwards. Sometimes they're a moment for you to be like, oh wow, I just grew myself, you know, but being able to continue doing that. As the project wraps up, I see myself getting more active again in training and nurturing volunteers. I'm never going to stop taking chats and calls from time to time because it just is so, you know, rewarding. But yeah, I can't see anything stopping me short of, you know, I don't know, an electromagnetic pulse destroying the entire communication network on Earth. So I do read some sci-fi.
So it sounds like you really have enjoyed what you started out doing with RFR. Yeah, you've kind of taken on another project, and maybe that's taken some time away from taking on some calls or some chats, but it's something that it's like that really basic part of why you joined RFR was, it seems like was what's gonna keep you going and what you wanna go back to.
Yes, yeah. And you know, I had a personal struggle recently, and another volunteer was just there for me, listened for an hour and used reflective listening, which was great.
It's somewhat nice, but then also like somewhat like scary to use, have some of the tools that you use, just get used on yourself too.
Yes, but like, I know what you're doing there.
why shouldn't I be able to do this myself?
Yeah.
So I've got one final question for you. If you could travel back in time, talk to your past self, who would you talk to and what would you talk about?
My 15-year-old me. And I would talk to 15-year-old me about the fact that the world is bigger than God and Satan, and that there are a lot of other ideas and viewpoints out there, and to keep exploring until I find what feels the most, what is the most true based on the evidence that's out there.
Sounds like we're talking about, you describe yourself at like the middle teens as kind of being like a rebellious person, and all of New England were praying for you. Do you feel like you were kind of on the verge of finding out that the world was bigger, or like was that kind of like a tipping point for you? Or
yeah, and so special? So at 15 I was a Bible quizzer, and so I would memorize books of the Bible and I'd sit on these things and jump and, you know, answer questions. I was number one in New England for a while. I still have my trophy too.
That's so
yeah
cool.
I do, I still have my trophy. It's a little lamp, because thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path.
Like one of those oil lamps that Aladdin would run. And
yes. Run. Yeah, exactly. With a little scroll coming out of the top, because it's God's word. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I actually burned out a couple of Sunday school teachers because I started asking those hard questions. You know, if God hardened Pharaoh's heart, why was Pharaoh guilty? If God needed Judas to betray him, why was Judas sent to hell? You know, why, if I commit suicide, do I go to hell? But if I steal a candy bar and get run over by a truck, I don't. If all sins are the same, you know, and I was asking these really hard questions. And I got told, look, you asked Jesus to be your savior when you were 4. And therefore, you are a Christian. God will not let you go. And I said, but that's not fair. I didn't know enough to make a decision then. And they said, it doesn't matter. And so I went, well, I'm going to do everything the church says no to. Well, guess what? When you're 15, there are a few things the church says no to that really aren't good for 15-year-olds to be doing.
It's also good in the real world to not be doing them, even though
exactly, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day, you know.
That's a good metaphor. Yeah.
And so I found myself a single mom, a teenage mom, and that's when everything turned, and I was committed to. And one of the things that was so hard was that because I had sinned, I could never have God's perfect will again. And so my only hope was to give my children God's perfect will. And so I lived from that point on until I shed my Christianity, feeling like I had blown it because of my doubt. And even now, okay, I'm having another, like, oh my goodness, I was being punished in this world because I'd had doubts as a teenager. That's what teenage brains do.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, it was teenagers were trying to explore the world around us and find our boundaries and kind of get to know ourselves a little bit. And we're also dealing with all sorts of crazy hormones and emotions that we've never experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a tough time for teenagers, especially when our religious upbringing kind of tells us that we begin to understand more that what it means to be imperfect or something like that, or bad or not worthy. And we kind of, I started to reject that. And it sounds like you kind of did too a little bit.
I did. And then again, because of things that happened, yeah. And I've got so many other crazy off the wall stories. We do not have time for them, but at the next convention, we'll sit around with some drinks and I'll share a few more.
I love it. Have you ever considered writing a book about this?
I've started.
Congratulations. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's awesome. I love hearing that kind of stuff. There's people out there like yourself who have got some incredible stories that could help others and will help others. They just need to be out there for folks.
Yeah.
So I, with that in mind, I'm really grateful that you opted to sit down and talk with me and kind of share with us.
I've loved it.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I'm really glad I got to know you, because you and I have really only seen each other maybe once or twice in passing. And
yes,
this is kind of like the first time we get to sit down and get to know one another. And
yes,
you're an awesome person.
Oh, thank you. I think you are too. And I need to hear your story. Is there one of these about you and how you got in this?
No, there isn't. No.
Do you need someone to host that so we can hear about you?
I'm a little boring.
I doubt it.
No, there isn't one of me yet. So maybe there will be one day.
Okay.
Gwen, again, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts, or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.